This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. As we all together continue responding to the new coronavirus outbreak, we here at WGCU are doing what we can to keep you informed with up-to-date and factual information. According to the Florida Department of Health's COVID-19 data and surveillance dashboard, the latest count puts the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in Florida at 1,324, with 379 confirmed cases in Lee County and 11 deaths, and 231 cases in Collier County with two deaths. There have been four cases confirmed in Glades with one death, and seven in Hendry with no deaths, and 47 in Charlotte County, where one person has died from COVID-19. We're starting off today's show by getting an update from the hospital systems in Lee and Collier counties, beginning with Lee. Lisa Scarlatta is Chief Patient Care Officer for Lee Health and is who is running the Incident Command Center for the COVID-19 situation. Lisa, welcome back to the show.
Right. Mike, thank you very much for having us back.
We're also joined on the phone by John Kling. He is Chief Nursing Officer at NCH Healthcare System. John, thanks for your time.
Thank you as well. Appreciate it.
And hang tight. We'll get to you in a few minutes. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Florida Gulf Coast University molecular virologist Dr. Sharon E. Cern. We are live on the air and on Facebook today, so if you would like to ask a question, weigh in there or on Twitter. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Follow the hashtag GCL. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And I just want to correct something I realized I said in the intro. It's 13,324 cases in Florida, not 1,324 cases. So, Lisa, let's start with you. Some basics from Lee Health in terms of what you're dealing with. How many confirmed positive cases has Lee Health seen so far?
Sure. As of this morning, we have 45 COVID-19 positive patients that are isolated, and we also have what we have called persons under investigation of 260 within our hospitals. We've been able to discharge 37 patients since our start of this. We've submitted over 4,600 specimens for testing. We have currently 162 employees that are quarantined. 14 of those were exposed at work and have been are noted to be positive with COVID-19, none of which resulted in deaths, although we do have 11 deaths from our COVID-19 patients across the system. Our current census, we see our ER numbers that are lower than normal, and we are running about 60 to 70% occupancy from an admission perspective.
Are the ER numbers lower than normal because people aren't going to the ER for things that they might normally be going to the ER for?
I believe that's part of it. I also believe that part of the stay-at-home executive order from the governor has assisted with that because, you know, and they want them to, they're concerned about their own health as well as the health of everyone in the community.
So when we see, like, on the Department of Health's website about the total number of cases in Lee County, that's the all the different ways people can be tested that aren't in the Lee Health system makes up the difference between those numbers, I guess, correct?
That is correct, yes. Not everyone comes through the hospital system, Lee Health system. Some are done as an outpatient basis. And as we've done, we've helped facilitate that with some of our specimen collection sites, both at Cape Coral and Pagefield.
How is testing going in terms of turnaround time, and how do the tests get tested? Do they get sent off, or are you doing them in-house?
Actually, right now we're not doing any in-house, although we hope to be able to do that by the end of this week. Some are sent to the Department of Health. Some are actually done through commercial, but whether that be Quest or LabCorp or any one of a multitude of other laboratories that actually assist with that.
How long is the turnaround typically at this point in the situation?
Right now we're looking at anywhere between 48 hours and 3 days.
Okay.
Maybe 4 days, depending on where it goes.
And the two mobile test sites, are they operating at full capacity, and are there any plans on maybe adding more?
Not at this moment. We won't be adding any more. We have seen a flattening of actually the tests that have been requested, anywhere from 180 to 223.
Gotcha. So how are you doing at Lee Health in terms of resources? Let's start with the new acronym we've all learned, PPE, or Personal Protective Equipment.
Well, thank you. And, you know, it's we call it a relentless pursuit of PPE. You know, we are no different than across the nation, if I talk to any of my colleagues that are out there. We are status quo. We have the ability to provide all of our nurses and our staff what they need currently. It's making sure that we can maintain that inventory that is key for us. And should we see a surge, if we see a surge, we want to make sure that we're prepared. So we work hand-in-hand with the county on the ability to acquire some state PPE. And we're also doing things such as utilizing UV light to extend the use of some of our masks, our N95 masks in particular.
I heard somebody that works for a company that does eye care, and they are trying to equip their doctors with some N95 masks, and they've asked them to, basically put them in a bag and put them away to the side instead of throwing them away when they're done, because presumably after some point the virus will no longer be there. Does that make sense, or is that in any way what you guys would think to do?
Actually, I can't speak to that process. I can tell you about the process that we do that has actually been recommended by the CDC.
Sure.
We do have them placed in a bag at the end of their shift. They are picked up. They are the UV light process is applied to them, and they are returned the next day in a different bag with their name, number of the individual's mask that it is. So that is the process that we use, and that's what the CDC has recommended.
Interesting. And then in terms of, like, we hear about a shortage of ventilators or, potential shortages of ventilators in places where it's blowing up, like New York City or, Louisiana. How is Lee Health doing with that?
We are currently in a very stable status for our ventilators, although we are pursuing acquisition of additional ventilators, again, should we have that peak in the next few weeks.
And then you mentioned earlier you guys are doing okay in terms of available beds, available ICU units at this point?
At this point we are, yes.
Do you have contingency plans in place if demand starts to exceed available supply?
We do. We actually have a surge plan that will be finalized this afternoon, and we were working hand-in-hand with the county on external surge plans that will actually help facilitate our need should we need to.
Do you know about what percentage of positive cases wind up requiring hospitalization?
I do not have that number off the top of my head, so I apologize.
Okay, no, that's okay. I just was wondering. And do you guys have guidance in terms of once somebody's been in the hospital and they've gotten better, how long until they can go home?
Yeah, depending on whether they are symptomatic, asymptomatic, if they're COVID positive, because remember, some of them don't have the results and they can be discharged ahead of time. A rule of thumb is once you are able to go home, it's another 14 days of quarantine and self-monitoring or monitoring by the Department of Health.
Are you aware of anything that's going on in the local jails in Lee County? Is that something that you guys interface with the Sheriff's Department?
I am not. I know they are actively looking at their response, but we are not involved in that.
Has how you treat patients changed as this has evolved, as other hospitals learn things and probably try to communicate within the systems?
Sure. I think we all learn something every time. It's no different than if we were in a natural disaster such as a hurricane. I think we will probably see a different preparation mode as we move forward. But from a treatment perspective, there's no cure. It is the treatment of the symptoms that the patients show, and we do that as recommended by the CDC.
So last question, just at this point, as somebody who's in charge of a response like this, how does it feel? How are you guys doing overall as an organization, as a team?
We always pull together. We call it Lee Health Strong, and that is actually coming from our staff. So, when something like this occurs, people band together and you work as a team. It's the epitome of that here at Lee Health. But thank you for asking.
Okay. Well, Lisa Scarlatta is Chief Patient Care Officer for Lee Health. Lisa, thanks for your time, and we'll probably talk to you again as this unfolds.
Great. Thank you so much.
If you're just joining the show today, we're getting an update from the hospital systems in Lee and Collier counties. That was Lisa Scarlatta from Lee Health. We're also joined on the line by John Kling. He is Chief Nursing Officer at NCH Healthcare System. John, thanks for your time and for your patience.
Oh, thank you very much for having us. Appreciate that.
We are live today, so if you'd like to ask a question, do so on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, all right, John, we're going to go over those same basic questions. How many confirmed positive cases has NCH Healthcare System seen?
So since this has started, we've had 73 positive cases. We currently have 23 positive COVID patients in our hospitals today. 34 of those have been discharged home. We also have, as Lisa mentioned, PUIs, persons under investigation. We have 26 inpatients who we are investigating to rule in or rule out for COVID.
So those persons that you're keeping under observation, are they there at the hospital? They just haven't, you just don't know with certainty yet?
That's correct.
Gotcha. How long is testing taking at NCH?
Like Lisa mentioned, in the beginning of this, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was taking a week to 2 weeks to get it back, but now we're getting it back in 2 to 4 days in about the last 5 or 6 days. So we're seeing a marked improvement in the Department of Health labs and the commercial labs getting those results back.
Gotcha. So people have tested 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was taking longer, but now you've shortened that up?
Correct.
Is there mobile testing happening in Naples? I think there was, but maybe there isn't. Clarify that, please.
Yes, yes. We're doing testing at two locations in Cuyahoga County. We have it at our downtown Baker campus, and then one of our outpatient offices also has drive-through testing. We do about 75 tests a day.
And how are you guys doing in terms of resources? Let's start again with the personal protective equipment like masks, gloves, gowns, face shields, et cetera.
Yes. Back about 6 or 7 weeks ago when the World Health Organization talked about this being a pandemic, we really started aggressively pursuing PPE, personal protective equipment, allocation and getting ready for this. And we already had a very strong pandemic supply because of our history with hurricanes. So as Lisa mentioned, we are in a stable mode right now for our PPE. We've been very proactive with using UV decontamination, as Lisa mentioned, from Lee Health. And right now we are have a good supply. We have procured another large supply in another week or so coming in, which even makes it even better. However, we need to be really prudent and follow the best practices as recommended by the CDC and Department of Health, so we have what we need when that surge comes.
Are you guys also doing any kind of sterilization like Lisa mentioned?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have several forms. As Lisa mentioned, we are doing in our UV, we have a Zenex robots or UV disinfecting robots, and we've been sterilizing our mask and using PPEs for about 2 weeks now. So that's been very helpful in helping us maintain our personal protective equipment supplies. And the exact process that Lisa mentioned, we're doing the same thing. We're working very closely with Lee. We talk daily to really kind of match what we're doing. And she mentioned Lee Strong, and I like to mention Southwest Florida Together, a campaign that we're doing with Lee for all of Southwest Florida, which is good. We're sharing best practices.
You know, real quick, before we get back to some of these questions, we just got a question from Kayleen on Facebook. She's just wondering, they're starting to recommend that people wear masks when they're out in public, but she's seeing a lot of people wear gloves, too. Can you offer any kind of advice as to whether or not gloves are important somehow, or are you still just as potentially going to touch something and then touch your face with a glove on or not?
So if you look at the CDC recommendations, I don't want to speculate personally, but I want to follow what the guidelines are. The facts are very important. Go to the NCH website, nchmd.org. There's the CDC recommendations. Mask and gloves are best practice. Good hand washing if you're not near a sink with soap and water, the hand sanitizers. I mean, at this time, to be prudent and follow best practices, I would recommend that if you could do all those things, that's great. If not, a mask is very important as we do social distancing and working to reduce the exposure to each other.
Hmm. I was listening to somebody yesterday talk about, when it comes to masks, it's not necessarily just, keeping you from breathing out something, droplets or somebody else breathing them into you, but it's also about keeping you from touching your own face, because if it's behind a mask, you can't touch it.
Yes. I saw an interesting article that, my three favorite hobbies is going to non-essential places, restaurants, and touching my face. And
yeah.
I think people are realizing how often our usual practices are not best practices today as we fight this pandemic. That's just a nice side effect of keeping us safer.
Yeah. Okay, so back to some of these basic numbers at NCH before we let you go. So available space for patients, available beds, available ICU units. Are you guys okay on that, or what are your numbers looking like?
Yeah, right now we have, as Lisa mentioned, a lot of the community has actually stayed away from the hospital and stayed at home, and we've seen a decrease in our census, which is good. We want those our patients and our community members to be safe at home. We have about 350 available beds in our healthcare system. We have a stable amount of critical care beds still, but we want to watch that very closely as this pandemic progresses. And if we see what we saw anywhere near, but New York City or New York State, so we're going to need all of our critical care beds. We have a very stable status of our ventilators as well as our supplies for critical care. So today, I think we're positioned well to care for our community.
We're seeing a roughly doubling happening in a week right now. I guess you guys went from about 119 to about 340 in Collier County as a total. If the social distancing that we're doing doesn't slow that down, are you looking into the future at what point you will be in that position of needing additional help?
Yes. Yeah, so we 2 weeks ago, we had finalized our surge plan and our pandemic plan. So we're well-positioned to add modular buildings if necessary for cohorting of non-COVID patients outside of the hospital. We can convert the majority of our hospital beds into critical care beds if necessary. So we do have a very good plan. We are working with Lee Health and Physicians Regional Medical Center on sharing of resources every day, twice a day. We send our bed availability into the state so that they can help them track a bed availability. So this will be a team effort if we get to that scenario.
Have any NCH staff members been self-isolating or quarantining or have tested positive?
So currently right now we have 32 employees that are self-quarantined. 29 of those are for healthcare-related exposures. 3 of those are for travel-related. They went on vacation prior to this going, so we're following Department of Health guidelines to keep them home isolated. That put that in perspective, a week ago we had 116. We're down to 32, so we have all those employees are coming back healthy, and we're excited to have them back. We currently have 10 employees who have the COVID-19 virus that were not healthcare exposure related at all. These were all, they traveled or had community acquired, or their spouses had them, and they acquired that and have not been at work since they've had these issues. So fortunately, no healthcare related exposures to this, but we do have 10 that traveled or had community exposure.
Last question before I let you go. Do you know what percentage of positive cases wind up requiring hospitalization?
I do not. That's a good question, and going forward, we'll look at that. But as Lisa mentioned, I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Okay. I'll try to follow up to you guys, because I think that's just something that people would like to know. You know, it might rest your mind at ease a bit or whatever. So I'll follow up with you, and we'll try to get that added to further conversations. John Kling is Chief Nursing Officer at NCH Healthcare System. John, thank you so much for your time, and good luck going forward. Hopefully we can do this again while it's necessary, but not for too long.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
If you're just joining the show today, we've been getting updates from NCH Healthcare System and Lee Health about the COVID-19 response. For the rest of the show, we're going to get an update from the world of virology and what's being learned by researchers with Dr. Sharon E. Cern. She's a molecular virologist and professor at Florida Gulf Coast University. We are live, so if you'd like to ask a question, go over to Facebook and leave your comment or question there. Sharon, so you've been tracking this as this goes forward. What would be some highlights that you might want to mention from what's going on in the research world in the past week or two?
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me back. Yes, I've been following this outbreak with keen interest and been looking at what researchers are now publishing or getting ready to publish. And so one of the things that people might have seen in the news today was that a tiger at the Bronx Zoo tested positive for coronavirus, a Malaysian tiger, and then I think a few other tigers and a lion tested positive. And there's a pre-publication study, a preprint in BioArchive that was published, or not published, but posted on March 31st that talked about the susceptibility of domestic animals for this particular coronavirus. And they looked at ferrets, cats, dogs, and other animals, and they found that ferrets and cats in particular were able to actually transmit coronaviruses, whereas dogs were not. So it's sort of interesting that today we saw this news report coming out from the Bronx Zoo, and there is some evidence that there can be potential transmission in cats.
Is that typical in a coronavirus situation, going from an animal to a human and then back into a different animal?
Well, with coronaviruses, their origin is typically from a non-human animal reservoir. So it does happen where you get transmission initially in another non-human animal reservoir and eventually jumping to humans, and it looks like it can then also jump back to animals, depending on the type of virus, right? It may not happen for all of them.
Another thing that I read and I heard on the virology podcast is that there are three different hydroxychloroquine, I got it now, trials that are apparently underway in terms of, testing people who've tested positive, testing healthcare workers that are taking it to see if that'll help keep them from getting it. Do you know anything about those?
Yeah, I was looking at some. There's a couple of studies that are, let me see if we can pull these guys up. There's two. There was a French study and one that was done in China. And if I could just take a second to make sure I don't... Yeah, so the French study, let me just make sure I got the, because I've been looking at a lot of papers.
Swimming in virology papers.
Yeah, so this is a hydrochloroquine paper. It was a French group. It's a preprint again. It's pre-publication. They looked at. It looks like hydrochloroquine might be improving the symptoms of individuals, but this is a particular study that had no control groups, meaning that they didn't have a negative control, so they just treated people with hydrochloroquine, and so it's a little bit anecdotal. The other study was done by a Chinese group. They took 62 patients. They did have a control group, and it looked like there was a relief of symptoms with hydrochloroquine, and again, both of these studies said that we need to do more. I know the U.S. is setting up to do some additional trials, and I think it's going to be a matter of a few weeks or so where we have additional data to support whether or not this is going to be an effective treatment for COVID-19.
One of the things that I've been reading up on is the ability of the presence of RNA to make it out into the world in a way that would almost seem like it was airborne transmitted in terms of tiny droplets. But there's a big difference between the presence of RNA and actual virus. Can you explain that?
Yes, absolutely. So coronavirus is an RNA virus, meaning it has an RNA genome, and the RNA genome is covered by a protein shell, and together this forms the virus particle. And if the whole thing is put together correctly, where it's not broken or damaged in any way, if it finds a host cell, it can enter. So that's a productive infection, and the virus can enter that host cell and start to replicate. But it's really easy to break virus particles open, and this just happens with time, or some of them are defective particles to begin with, and this is just how viruses replicate. They don't all make perfect capsids around them. So viral genomes can be present anywhere and can be found, but that doesn't necessarily mean that because the genome is present that the virus is infectious, or that, or in fact, it's formed competent replication, competent particles. And so when we look at studies that look at presence of viral genomes, all we know is that, you know, there's nucleic acid. We don't necessarily know whether or not there's still infectious particles that can transmit the virus, which could then cause symptoms to another host. And so we just have to be really careful with that. The gold standard for knowing whether or not a virus is infectious is by collecting samples and trying to grow up the virus in the lab. You can do this in cell culture, and you can look for effects of the virus on the cell and determine for sure whether or not there are active viral particles present. So that is the gold standard. So there's typically many, many imperfect particles that are broken or somehow damaged that contain genome, so contain the RNA genome of the virus, but they are not infectious, and they don't cause a problem. They don't cause disease because they're not infectious particles.
I also read that 4 out of 5 people who are coming down with COVID-19 are losing some of their olfactory senses for a while. Is that typical with coronavirus, you know, diseases?
I think that might be one of the symptoms where you sort of lose your sense of taste and smell with different respiratory diseases. But something that has come up, a recent study, other coronaviruses like SARS that we heard about in the past that also originated in China, and MERS that was circulating around in Saudi Arabia, those viruses tended to replicate in the lower respiratory tract. And so it was very difficult to swab out viral samples or collect viral samples from the throat or the nose because the viruses tended to go further down inside the respiratory tract, close, you know, getting down into the lungs. But there's a recent study that was done that actually shows that there is replication of virus, so not just looking at viral RNA copies in throat samples and nose swab samples, but also replicating viruses or intact particles that can replicate. And so that's kind of a big difference between some of the other outbreaks of coronaviruses that we've seen that have jumped from animal hosts to the human population, such as SARS and MERS, and this particular type of coronavirus that appears to replicate quite well in the upper respiratory tract, which could potentially be one of the indicators of why it transmits so readily, because it doesn't have to be someone with a really deep, productive infection in the lungs. It could be somebody who is shedding, perhaps asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, who just has a little cold or appears to have a little cold and could be coughing, sneezing, and spreading particles that are viable.
Gotcha. Well, that is all the time we have for the show. We'll have you back, I'm sure, and we'll get into some of the more stuff as it develops. Dr. Sharon E. Cern is a molecular virologist who's also a professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at Florida Gulf Coast University. Sharon, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me back, Mike.
And thanks to our earlier guests, Lisa Scarlatta, Chief Patient Care Officer for LeeHealth, and John Kling, Chief Nursing Officer at NCH Healthcare System. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, wgcu.org/GCL, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7. 7 FM NPR for Southwest Florida.